Morning, everyone. Welcome to Senate Hess on this bright Monday morning. Nice to have the sun coming in through the windows. We're here this morning to talk about Senate Bill 13 by Senator Sharp, Senate Bill 61 by Senator Ellis, both regarding tobacco taxes. For the record, senators present, Senator Ward, Ellis, Green, Wilkin. Senator Lehman is in Anchorage and expected in to the meeting here at about 9:45. Staff present, Sheila is here, for those that don't know Sheila Peterson, and Chris Jones is our secretary. We have some folks out on the teleconference network. Let's see, before we do that, I thought what we'd do, committee, if this is all right with you, we would try to finish testimony today, and then on Friday, we'll mark this bill up and decide what we want to do with it. So if you do have any amendments or thoughts on it, if you'd get that to Sheila or myself before Thursday, we'll get those out to the committee. So on Friday, we'll have committee discussion. So today, let's take an hour and 45 minutes if we need that much for testimony. We do have some folks long distance. We have a few on the teleconference network, and I understand we have Nome, Kodiak, and Anchorage. Kodiak, are you there?
Yes, we're here this morning.
Okay, thank you. Nome, are you there?
Yes, we are online.
Good morning. And Anchorage, Anchorage online?
Yes, we are, and I'll send our price list right down.
All right, thank you. We'll take those folks and have them testify. And then if there's anyone in the hearing room here that needs to testify right away, fine. My intent would be to have them go ahead either in the room or on teleconference, go ahead and testify. If not, we'll do agency testimony first. There's a couple of prepared presentations for us, and then we'll go to the teleconference network and take those people that are long distance. I understand we have two people long distance. Mr. Tillotson, are you in West Virginia? Mr. Tillotson?
Yes.
Hi, sir, I'm in Virginia.
Okay. Good morning. We'll come back to you in just a moment. And also, Mr. Sweener from Canada. Mr. Sweener, are you there, please?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. All right. Either of you on long distance, do you have a time crunch or do you have a desire to go first, or would you like to sit and listen to agency and a few members of the public testify?
Go ahead.
I'm David Sweener. I don't have a huge time crunch. I understood that I'd be hearing some other people testify before I did.
Okay, we'll let, if you run into a time problem, please interrupt and let us know. Other than that, we'll come back to you towards the end. Mr. Is it Tollison?
Yes,
Mr. Tollison, how about you?
I have to teach a class at 4:30 this afternoon, Eastern time, so that's my only constraint. Otherwise, I can wait.
All right. I can assure you we'll be done by then.
Okay.
So we'll just hold. We'll have you towards the end then, and if you do run into a problem, please interrupt, and we'll get you on.
Thank you.
Let's start with the public out on our teleconference network and go first to Nome. We have Mr. Duffy Holliday. Mr. Holliday, are you there, please?
Yes, I am.
Mr. Holliday, would you please begin our testimony? Limit your comments, please, to 5 minutes, and please state whom you represent, if anyone. Please go ahead.
Okay. My name is Duffy Holliday. I basically represent myself, although you probably didn't know that I happen to work for a health corporation, North Sound Health Corporation. I am a health educator. So I'm testifying on my own behalf. I suppose that basically I'm asking that those listening in would vote on behalf of the bill. I've listened in on some previous teleconferences last week in the Senate, and I wanted to bring up some other sides of the argument that came up. One of the arguments that came up was that from the tobacco lobbyists was that buying tax-exempt cigarettes on military bases could lead to bootlegging cheap cigarettes. That argument really doesn't hold up yes, there are tax-exempt cigarettes, and they're much cheaper on the military basis. But that privilege isn't being abused. I actually worked on Fort Wainwright, Alaska, at a packaged beverage warehouse near Fairbanks, where you could buy packaged carton cigarettes, a package of cigarettes, or a case of cigarettes. In the 6 months that I was there, I didn't see any incidents of excessive buying or resale profit or anything. It averaged one carton of cigarettes per customer. If it was a smoker, if it was a husband and wife team, it might be two cartons of cigarettes if they both smoked. The most I ever saw purchased at one time was four cartons of cigarettes. And after the purchase, I asked the manager, and he knew all of his customers pretty much. And he said that the individual who bought four cartons of cigarettes at one time was retired military. Both he and his wife smoked, and they lived 50 miles out of town. So when they came to town once a month, they stocked up. So that's an argument that isn't really going to go anywhere, saying that people are going to abuse their military privileges to bootleg cigarettes. Another argument that came up was saying that we're not sure which way the state of Alaska is going, and that the Native enrollment could take in many individuals who are not currently in Native enrollment right now. I had lunch with my previous director, who was from Oklahoma. She's been tracing down her ancestry, trying to get in on the enrollment for the benefits of the BIE card. The tribe that she is from will not accept anyone except for ages 1 through 3 and 15, 16, 17, and 18. For whatever reasons there are. So only her 18-year-old son can get in, and maybe her grandchildren. But if you don't have the Native blood in you, it's extremely hard to get in. So someone else who had traced down their ancestry, the woman I worked with, also cannot get in. And she was saying that in 1907 to 1913 or whatever, they were buying land from the Indians, and if you didn't sign up to sell your land, then they weren't on the rolls. So there's a lot of Indians who didn't get listed on the rolls. Anyway, the point is, even in Alaska, it's extremely hard. If you don't have the bloodline, you're not going to get in. So that's a pretty frivolous argument. Based on my own personal experience, I believe that this is, the people that I've talked to that are not surrounding myself with just friends, I believe that it is a user-friendly tax. The people actually want this tax to go in place. So basically, I would encourage the voting members to vote for this bill. And I thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any questions of Mr. Holliday? Seeing none, thank you for coming out this morning. I'd like to go to Kodiak now, and is Ms. Diana Buffington there, please?
Yes, my name is Diana Buffington, and I'm the Republican District Chairman in Kodiak for District 6. And I'd like the committee to note that in Alaska Magazine, this month's issue of Alaska Magazine, they have an interesting article that says, "No more easy come, easy go, visiting Hyder Carry ID." Poor Hyder, Alaska, the tiny settlement of 90 people located at the north end of Portland Canal and southeast, is accessible from the United States only by air or sea. The only way to drive in or out of Hyder is via Canada through Stewart, British Columbia, a town of about 900 that lies a few miles east. No formal border crossing has existed between the two towns since 1985, but now Canada has set up a customs post to slow smuggling. The reason for the pull-up? The loss of tax revenue. While a carton of cigarettes in Hyder might go for around $30, the same carton in Stewart costs $55. Other heavily taxed items in Canada, such as hard liquor, beer, and wine, are also much more expensive than in the United States. The Canadian government says it loses millions in tax revenues each year because these goods are smuggled in from Canada from Hyder. The new post will be manned 24 hours a day during the summer and 12 hours a day during the rest of the year. The crossing at the border should have at least one piece of identification, a driver's license, passport, birth certificate, or alien residency card will do. We are going to set up a bootlegging system in any country, in any state that has ever had and increases their taxes on any sin taxes on any applicable items. You always have a bootlegging system that is set up. It's inherent in the system, and I don't know how this state is going to pay for more policing. The state constitution does not allow for dedicated taxes to be set up, so you're going to have to find some form or way to police this action, and I think that's going to pretty well eat up your tax revenue that you have cited. You're also going to have a problem of having people from outside the United States or the lower 48 who have friends, relatives, and persons outside the state shipping or mailing in cartons of cigarettes. And I don't know how you're going to adequately police that unless you have the postal agency come in on this. So I already have another set of statements that I sent in last week, but I thought I wanted to add into my testimony concerning this quote from the Alaska Magazine.
Thank you, Ms. Buffington. Any questions of the witness? Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Buffington, are you you gave your affiliation as the as chair of District 6 Republican, so you're representing that organization today?
Well, I'm representing my constituents out here.
I just wondered if you were representing the Republican. You said you're the chair of District 6 Republicans. So I had to assume that you were representing that group. I just wanted you to give you a chance to say if that were true or not.
I'm representing the persons that have contacted me, and I've had over 150 phone calls that feel that the Republicans said that we would issue no new taxes. This is a tax, whether you want to call it a user fee or whatever you want to call it, it's still a tax. And most people out here elected their elected representatives for no new taxes, and now we have Republicans introducing new taxes.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not completely familiar with the situation, but maybe there's some people who will testify later on who are about the situation at Hyder. And I would hope someone correct me if my facts are wrong, but I was under the impression that Canadian taxes on tobacco products are much, much higher than just about anywhere in the United States. And so it's a more expensive product in Canada. It's a less expensive product in Alaska. So the flow, if this is in fact a problem, and I have no reason to disbelieve Ms. Buffington about there being a concern about the border crossing there, it would be a cheaper product from the United States or from Alaska flowing to Canada, where people would want the cigarettes at a lesser price. So to me, that argues very much for increasing the tobacco tax here in Alaska. So that there would be, if the product were closer to the same price on each side of the border, there would be less of a concern about the product flowing back and forth for some economic reason. So unless Ms. Buffington, unless I didn't understand her testimony correctly, and I'd ask her if to comment, it must not be a problem at this time of expensive Canadian cigarettes flowing to the United States side where the product is cheaper. If there's a problem, it's in the other direction, which to me argues for us getting in line with the more in line with the rest of the world in terms of taxing this product, because other people have recognized how much money we can recoup for health and tobacco control efforts. So, Ms. Bevington, were you able to hear that, and do you know which way the cigarettes flow there?
Well, you have to understand that the state of Alaska has very little border going across, or should I say populated border going across to the to Canada. However, I'm talking about lower 48 cigarettes coming up into Alaska via the mail or via people carrying it. We also have a lot on plane traffic between the United States, mainly Oregon and Washington, up into the state of Alaska. I was just pointing out that Hyder is just one very small community that is bootlegging its cigarettes into Canada. I'm just trying to prove a point that bootlegging has already existed in this market for the cigarette going into Canada. Canada is losing revenues, which this state will lose the revenues. You will not see the $40 million that has been touted by the Department of Revenue coming into this state, because most people will either, one, quit smoking, or two, they will find another avenue to get their cigarettes. Sin taxes have not worked. In 1919, the entire U.S. government put a complete prohibition on alcohol. It didn't work, and 15 years later, we took it off, and we have been taxing sin for ever since. It doesn't matter what I said. It doesn't matter if you want to call it a tax, a user fee, or whatever. It's still a tax, and it is on a very minute population. And the Constitution of the state of Alaska says you cannot do that.
Mr. Chairman, one final question. Ms. Buffington, we've heard other comments about the potential with military exchanges and that sort of thing being a concern. Do you share that concern about the military posts and the cigarettes there that aren't taxed as much as they would be off the base or off the post?
I think you will see an increase. We have the largest Coast Guard base out here, and I don't think so much that you will have an increase. They'll have to set regulations and control on these bases to limit the number of cartons that they can purchase. But if you have non-smoking personnel buying for smoking personnel, you're going to see an increase of non-tax items being bought at the base. And therefore, again, you're defeating your purpose of the tax. And your purpose for the tax is, under these bills, is to prohibit the youth from getting a hold of this. And I have to say that we did that several years ago by placing a law on the books. And to my knowledge, you have not repealed it, nor have you revised it, that anyone under 19 can't buy cigarettes. So you've got people, one or the other, buying cigarettes, and it's either parents or adults of age 19 or above purchasing cigarettes for their children. And I think there you're getting into realms of denying a parental right to supply their children with cigarettes for whatever reason.
Thank you, Senator Ellis. Thank you, Mrs. Buffington, for joining us this morning. I'd like to go now to Anchorage, where we have four people to testify. I'd like to start with Ms. Jenny Loudon. Ms. Loudon, are you there, please? If you would please.
My name is Jenny Loudon, and I'm here representing myself this morning. This past spring, I had the unfortunate experience of spending several days in a cramped hospital room, along with 10 other family members. We were there to make sure that another family member was not alone, as she died at the relatively young age of 63 from emphysema, caused by a lifetime of smoking. The 5 years before her final trip to the hospital were full of pain and suffering. She had to take an increasing amount of steroids just to keep her lungs open enough so that she could take a breath of air. The steroids caused easy bruising. Just taking her hand and holding it tightly could result in deep black and blue marks. The steroids also caused increasing failure in her other organs. Her inability to get a good and full breath of air also made it difficult for her to walk any distance. Just walking into different rooms of her own home was often a very difficult task. When she finally went to the hospital for the last time, her family members gathered around her. We sat in silence for 3 days as we listened to her gasp for air. It seemed impossible that she was able to continue living on such a small amount of air. She sounded like a fish out of water. It was not unexpected when her body could no longer continue. In fact, it was a blessing to see that the simple act of breathing, something that we normally take for granted, was no longer such a struggle for her. I did not come here today to tell you my story because it is unique. Unfortunately, it is not. 1993, over 1.9 million people in the United States were afflicted with the disease, and over 13,000 people died. Over 82% of those cases were caused by a lifetime of smoking. My family member who died of emphysema knew that smoking was not a healthy behavior. She was a public health nurse in Alaska for over 20 years. She knew better. But the simple truth is that even though she knew the dangers of smoking, she was addicted and she could not stop. The vast majority of research shows that adults do not start smoking, teenagers do. Alaska must stop kids from becoming addicted, or all the knowledge in the world of the dangers of smoking may not be able to help them. I urge this committee to increase the tobacco tax by $1 per pack. Help create disincentives for teenagers to start smoking and to become addicted. Spare Alaskans from suffering this kind of painful death caused by tobacco. And help spare Alaskan families from having to watch their loved ones taken away from them in this horrific manner. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Questions of Ms. Loudon? Seeing none, thank you for coming out this morning. I'd like to go now to Pat Center. Pat, are you there, please?
Yes. I'm Pat Center, and I'm from the Alaska Nurses Association. The Alaska Nurses Association is in favor of increasing the tax on cigarettes by at least $1 and increasing the excise tax on tobacco products such as chewing tobacco to 100% of the wholesale price. Like the person before me, there's nothing more heartbreaking for us as nurses than to have to care for someone who is gasping for air because of the lung disease brought on by tobacco use. We as nurses see firsthand how the use of these products leads to disability, pain, and premature death. We also know firsthand how difficult it is for our patients, family members, and colleagues to quit smoking once they have started. Even nurses who care for people suffering from lung disease on a daily basis have a terrible struggle to quit smoking once they have started. There's nothing logical about an addiction. Because of our firsthand experience with the tragedy of disease brought on by tobacco use, it is imperative that we do everything possible to try to reduce the number of young people who become addicted to tobacco products. Increasing the price of tobacco products will help achieve this goal. We also feel that the increase in price needs to be more than a token amount in order for this strategy to be effective. Thank you for letting me testify this morning.
Thank you, Ms. Center. Questions of the witness? Seeing none, I'd like to go now to Ms. Judy Miller. Ms. Miller in Anchorage, please.
How about Judith Muller? I reside at 1518 Airport Heights Drive. I've been in Alaska since 1956. My parents have both retired here. My husband and I are raising our family here. I'm a member of Pioneers of Alaska. I'm a sourdough. I'm a Republican, and I'm going to stay in Alaska, God willing, until I die. For 8 years, I've also run a nonprofit organization called Alaska Healthcare. We help folks around the state organize health fairs in their community. Last year, we did about 110 health fairs. Because of the nature of our agency, we work a lot with other nonprofits, such as the Heart Association, Cancer Society, the Lung Association, the Alaska Native Health Board, the Native Health Corporation. All of these nonprofits have put a tremendous amount of energy and time and money into helping people quit smoking and preventing those that we can from starting to smoke. I'd like to tell you about some of the efforts that we have put into tobacco in the 8 years that I've been involved. We've developed pamphlets and posters and patches and stickers and buttons. We've developed banners and bus signs and displays about tobacco. We've worked with schools, with parents and principals and teachers, with community leaders, with sports personalities. We've worked in churches, with retailers, with people who have vending machines, with security guards, with law enforcement officers. We've worked with businesses and hospitals and physicians and village health aides, with the health educators and the public health practitioners. We've worked with natural helpers programs, with peer counselor programs, and most recently the Teens Against Tobacco groups. We've helped organize tobacco-free days and tobacco-free dances. We've organized special speakers who talk about their experience with tobacco. We've given out mini-grants for communities who want to organize special events. We've purchased television and produced television and radio and print PSAs. We've offered smoking cessation programs. We've offered information on deceitful advertising.
I can't tell you in 3 minutes all that's been done by the nonprofits to help with this problem. And we've had very success with all of these activities, yet despite our best efforts, some groups, especially young girls, continue to smoke at increasingly high rates. As you can hear, the need for this tax is not our first attempt at dealing with this problem. But the tax is a strategy that will help prevent teens from smoking. I'm very proud to be an Alaskan, and I'm very proud that our state legislature is moving forward on this. Thank you for letting me testify. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Muller. Questions of the witness? Seeing none, thank you for coming out this morning. I'd like to go now to the last witness in Anchorage, Mr. Eric Myers. Mr. Myers, are you there, please?
Yes, I am. My name is Eric Myers. For the record, I'm testifying here today on my own behalf. My address is 2834 Kinnick Avenue, Anchorage 99517. I'd first like to address the topic of smokers' rights. State that I am not a prohibitionist. I do not support the ban of tobacco products, nor is that my objective. I believe that adults should have the right to smoke cigarettes or to eat cigarettes for that matter. I believe that adults should be able to conduct themselves with as much freedom as possible. However, when the individual freedoms adversely impact other individual freedoms, then society should and must intervene to safeguard the rights of others, such as the case with tobacco use, and particularly in the case of children. With regard to smokers' rights, it must also be recognized that there are smokers' responsibilities, including the responsibility for the enormous economic costs that are not accurately reflected in the current low price of tobacco products. Tobacco use costs the Alaskan economy hundreds of millions of dollars each year, and the current low level of taxation only generates a tiny fraction of that amount. The fact is that smokers are heavily subsidized by non-smokers like myself. Non-smokers also pay in many other ways as well because of higher priced goods and services, increased sick time, decreased productivity, extra break time, etc., etc., etc. Even when smokers supposedly pay their own way, these expenses are commonly covered by insurance companies that simply pass the cost back to all consumers, three-quarters of which are non-smokers. So when you hear talk of smokers' rights, you should think of smokers' responsibilities. The $1 per pack tax increase being proposed is the very least that legislators should insist upon in the name of fairness so that cost causers are cost payers. Even without regard to the enormous health benefits of the tobacco tax, the $1 per pack tax increase is more than justified in order to balance the books. Although much of the tobacco industry rhetoric is built around arguments of rights and freedoms among adults, these arguments are largely a deliberate, deceptive effort from the essential truth that smoking is a childhood problem. Adults rarely start smoking. A 12-year-old seduced by a multi-billion dollar ad campaign featuring cartoon characters is not making an informed lifestyle choice. Now, the industry likes to put up arguments like social engineering arguments like little wind-up dolls, but this argument doesn't hold up well when considered more closely. The legislature routinely uses tax policy to modify behavior. There are any number of tax credit and tax incentive proposals every year, and every tax law has a behavioral effect. Oil and gas taxes discourage oil and gas development. Property taxes discourage the buying and selling of real estate. Fishing license taxes discourage fishing. And so I ask you, is it okay for someone to propose a gas reserves tax to try and compel the oil company to build a gas line, but to oppose a tobacco tax because it will discourage children from becoming addicted to a deadly drug? Finally, I will simply say that as far as whether it will work or not, there is abundant evidence. The GAO in 1989, the National Cancer Institute in 93, the U.S. Surgeon General in 94. I would simply end this with this observation of one longtime observer of the tobacco industry. Serious thought needs to be given to any tobacco control measure which does not evoke a hostile reaction or worse is supported by the tobacco industry. Only those measures which cause the tobacco industry are likely to significantly reduce tobacco consumption. I suggest that you have at hand a proposal that is making the tobacco industry scream and will accomplish exactly the purpose intended. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Myers. Any questions of the witness? Seeing none, thanks for coming out this morning. For the record, Senator Ward has gone to Senate Finance to testify on a bill, I think, and he should be back to join us shortly. I'd like to go now to, let's see, first note that Bob Bartholomew is in the audience from Department of Revenue. Where's Bob? In case he needs any questions, he's here to answer them. Elmer Lindstrom is here from the Department of Health and Social Services, the Commissioner's Office. Elmer has put together a packet, which we have. And Elmer, if you'd please provide your testimony. They have asked ahead of time. This should take about 8 or 9 minutes, and so I've agreed that that's fine. So, Elmer, if you could get her into 8 or 9 minutes, we'd appreciate it. For the folks on teleconference, Mr. Tollison.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Sweener, we're going through a tobacco tax bill analysis put together by the Department of Health and Social Services, and speaking is from the Commissioner's Office, Mr. Elmer Lindstrom. And Elmer, if you'd introduce your assistant, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Elmer Lindstrom, Special Assistant to Commissioner Perdue in the Department of Health and Social Services. And with me is Pat Carr, Tobacco Program Specialist in the Division of Public Health with the Department. Commissioner Perdue apologizes. She had every intention of being here this morning, but she was called away to the Governor's office for a briefing and apologizes for not being here this morning. I'll be very brief, and then Pat Carr would like to take you through the presentation very quickly. I think it is about 8 minutes last time she timed herself in front of the mirror. But first, to go back in history just a little bit, Commissioner Perdue for Christmas got a framed copy of an advertisement. I'd say it's probably circa 1950. And it, as you can see, a picture of a doctor and a policeman. According to a recent nationwide survey, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette. And I don't think you would hear too many doctors stepping up to the plate to endorse one of these products at this point. I think you've certainly heard from a lot of health professionals in the last several days. Certainly the healthcare professions are very supportive of this bill. And it just illustrates how far the debate has gone, how the world has turned since the time when this ad was produced. If I could just pass that around, it's kind of an interesting piece of history. Mr. Chairman, there have been a number of bills introduced this session, and we certainly appreciate Senator Ellis, Senator Sharp, as well as members from the other body. We certainly appreciate the interest of the Senate last year and the overwhelming support they gave for a tobacco tax bill. It's a very difficult issue for some, as we know, and without taking up too much of Pat's time, we'd like to go through a presentation for you.
Thank you. And could I ask, do people in the hearing room have this? Do we have any extras that we can sort of pass around a little bit so they can follow along? It's a lot of numbers and graphs, and I think if everybody had it in front of them, it would help them follow the discussion. So, Ms. Carr, if you would, please.
Thank you. For the record, as Mr. Lindstrom indicated, I'm Pat Carr with the Division of Public Health, Department of Health and Social Services. Chairperson Wilkin and other members of this committee, we, the legislature and the administration, are responsible for protecting and promoting the health of Alaskans. We have many children, all of Alaska's children and our future adults to protect. The information that we put in your hands shows that increasing the cigarette tax by a dollar is warranted and is the single most effective step we can take at this time to protect the health of our residents, especially our children. Tobacco usage is the number one cause of preventable death and disease in the United States, accounting for more than 400,000 deaths each year. 23% of Alaskans 35 years of age or older in 1991 were attributable to smoking. As you consider the health impact of smoking, you'll see that with these 400,000 deaths in the United States per year that are attributable to cigarette smoking, that this represents more than the number of deaths that are attributable to fires, illegal drugs, homicides, AIDS, suicides, motor vehicular accidents, and alcohol combined. So when we bring it into our own doorsteps and we look at the health impact of smoking in Alaska, we see that cigarette smoking causes over 1,400 deaths per year. Again, this is more than the other causes of death that I previously listed together. based on a youth behavior risk survey and an adult behavior risk factor survey, we found in Alaska that 83% of adult smokers report that they started smoking before the age of 20. In other words, nicotine addiction is a pediatric disease. 21% of Alaskan high school students reported that they regularly smoked in the last month. This means 20 out of the past 30 days they have been smoking. 25% of Alaskan middle school students reported smoking at least one cigarette in the last month. In 1996, surveys were conducted under the supervision of the Department of Health and Social Services, which found that 64% of Alaska tobacco merchants did comply with tobacco restriction laws. However, this means that 36% do not comply. The federal government mandates an 80% compliance rate by the year 2000 under the Sinar Amendment. Tobacco vendors refuse to sell to 14 and 15-year-olds 71% of the time, while 16 and 17-year-olds were refused 58% of the time. We feel that special concern should be given to the high rate of use among Alaska Natives. Today, Alaska Natives have some of the highest rates of tobacco use in the world, 47% for men and 39% for women. Alaska Natives account for 23% of smoking-related deaths, while they account for only 17% of our state's population. Alaska Natives have the highest cancer mortality rate of any Indian Health Service area. The lung cancer death rate for Alaska Native women is three times that of the national average. Tobacco use among Alaska Native youth is higher than non-Native use. The chart that is on the next chart in your packet indicates and gives you some comparison of showing tobacco use among high school students in the United States and in Alaska and among Alaska Natives. We're very concerned about these rates and hope that you will pay particular notice to this. For Alaska Native children, 41% of Alaska Native boys and 32% of Alaska Native girls were using smokeless tobacco weekly. And we found that among the boys, that 45% started using tobacco before the age of 8, which is astounding. Not only are we concerned about the direct health implications, but we're also concerned about the drain that this is causing on our economy. The total direct medical cost for smoking-related illnesses for Alaskans aged 35 years or older in 1993 was over $96 million. $23 million of the direct medical care cost for smoking-related illness was paid by Medicaid in Alaska. This is represents the 50-50 match between state and federal funds. Meanwhile, the state collected only $15.6 million in cigarette tax revenues in 1993, and this excludes the taxes of the $1 to $2 million on smokeless tobacco. Tobacco taxes aren't new to us in the state. The state has taxed tobacco since territorial days when a 5 cents per pack tax was levied on cigarettes to help fund school construction. Our current tax level of 29 cents per pack has been in place since 1989. Many other states have enacted tobacco tax increases over the recent years. In 1989, Alaska ranked 17th among the 50 states and the District of Columbia on the amount of tobacco tax levied. Currently, Alaska ranks 28th among states. The next chart in your packet represents the disproportionate amount of the total cost that taxes of cigarettes that taxes now comprise. I think you'll find that to be a pretty interesting chart to show that taxation has not kept up with its share of the total cost. Tobacco taxes increase the overall cost of cigarettes and therefore impact consumption. We found, and there's substantial literature as other speakers this morning have alluded, that for every 10% increase in cigarette prices, youth consumption will fall by at least 10%. And for every 10% increase in cigarette prices, general consumption will fall by 4%. At the current smoking rates, approximately 18,000 of Alaskans currently under the age of 18 will die prematurely of tobacco-related illnesses. A $1 per pack tax increase would reduce youth smoking in Alaska by an estimated 32%. And the tobacco tax would prevent over 5,700 premature deaths among Alaskans currently under the age of 18. The next chart in your package shows you, gives some indication of how the United States as a whole compares to other industrialized nations on the rate of taxation. And we see with the United States being at the bottom of the list on the bar chart, showing that the current tax average tax rate on a pack of cigarettes is 57 cents in this country, with 24 cents of that being federal, and an average being a federal, an average across the other states of being around 33 cents a pack. We feel that from the department that this is the time is right to bring this to your attention and to continue advocating for the at least $1 per pack tax. The groundwork is in place. You have certainly heard from testimony thus far, as well as other surveys that we have been conducting, that there's broad public support for the tax. 75% of Alaskans surveyed support the $1 per pack tax. This includes 75% of conservatives, 75% of moderates, 73% of liberals, and 55% of smokers. The tax has broad community support, and nationally and in our state, the tax is supported by C. Everett Koop, previous former Surgeon General, over 200 representatives and individuals who represent the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance, represented by many of the groups that have spoken previously this morning, the Alaska Native Health Board, the Cancer Society, and the American Heart Association. Thank you, Chairman Wilson.
Thank you, Ms. Carr. Questions of Ms. Carr or Mr. Lindstrom? Seeing none, thank you for that nice presentation. Yes, sir.
One final note, Mr. Chairman. Tomorrow will be my 21st day without a cigarette.
And who said smoking was addictive?
All right, let's see. No one else in the hearing room, I think, has signed up to testify. Let's go now to our two long distance witnesses, and we'd like to start with Mr. Tollison. Mr. Tollison in West Virginia, would you please join us? And if you could provide your testimony and limit it to 5 minutes, please.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, we can hear you just fine. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me today, especially by this wonderful technology you have for me to testify from my office. I'm appearing today on behalf of the Tobacco Institute. I am a professional economist, and I have done a lot of research and writing on public policy and taxation issues with respect to the tobacco industry. I think that what you're engaged in raising the tax on the dollar in Alaska is not a very good idea for a lot of reasons. I think fundamentally what the tax bill amounts to at the bottom, after you strip it all away, is that you're raising essentially taxes on poor people a dollar a day. So this bill, if proposed without the word cigarettes in it, would amount to a $350 tax increase on the poorest of Alaskans. And that, if by any criteria, I think, is not a good idea. I think if such a bill were introduced freestanding without the word cigarettes appearing in it, that everyone would vote against it, and with good reason. It's not a good idea for other reasons. The issue of smuggling has been raised, and there was some discussion of the tax rate in Canada. It is true that the western provinces of Canada continue to have higher taxes on cigarettes, but the taxes in Ontario and central Canada are now down to the level of Michigan, which suggests the type of experience that they had with smuggling when they raised their tax rates dramatically, as you're proposing to do. In Alaska, I still would maintain, under this tax increase, that you're going to have a significant smuggling problem. I also don't think that you're going to be able to short-circuit people, ordinary citizens going on to military reservations and Indian reservations and buying tax-free tobacco. And keep in mind that what you're doing there is giving ordinary citizens very poor incentives. You're giving them incentives to perhaps resell those tobacco products. And that's not the kind of position that we would normally like to put ordinary citizens in. I also don't think that the deterrent to youth smoking is an excise tax. I think the deterrent to youth smoking is a law that you have, and is also family and peers where youth pick up their behavioral patterns. I would guess that if you survey youth, pre-19-year-olds in Alaska or in Virginia, that many of them would not know what an excise tax was, and that they surely wouldn't know if they'd ever paid one or not. In any event, when I was a young man and I smoked, my father was a much more significant deterrent to my smoking activity than the excise tax was. I also think that you're going to do some damage to your retailers in Alaska with this bill. Not only are they going to lose tobacco sales, but they're going to lose associated sales. And for all of those reasons, this does not strike me as a particularly compelling idea. But ask yourself the following question. Do you really think that when all is said and done, and you count up all the cost and benefits, that smokers don't already pay their own way in Alaska? I think if you did a careful analysis and you counted the correct cost and the correct benefits and the taxes that smokers already pay, I think you would see that they're already overtaxed. So thank you very much for hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Tollison. Questions of the witness? I had a couple, if I could, please. Mr. Tollison, you heard earlier the state of Alaska tell us that and pardon me, you work for the Tobacco Institute, or if you would...
I teach at George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia, teach economics, and I'm appearing today on behalf of the Tobacco Institute.
Thank you. You heard the state of Alaska tell the committee that 83% of adult smokers report they've started smoking before age 20. Would you comment on that number, please?
Well, I don't have any basis to dispute it. But again, seems to me that we have to think of what is the state's responsibility in that regard. I mean, I think the state can inform people of the risk that they take in all types of areas, not just smoking, but in other areas. The state has an obligation to provide information about risky activities to individual taxpayers and consumers. But beyond some point, we call people adult. And if they choose to engage in those activities, we let them, so long as they don't infringe the freedom of other people by so doing. So I think conceptually, we have to, at some point, let these people be called adults and let them pursue their set of consumption activities as they see fit.
If we asked the Cancer Institute if they had numbers, if they had the basis for some opinion on, to refute that number, would they be able to do that? Would they be able to provide us with that?
About the onset of smoking in people under the age of 20?
Yes.
I'm not sure, but maybe I'm not understanding your question. Could you help me by maybe asking it in a different way?
I would be interested in the tobacco industry's numbers that would either support or refute the 83% number that the state of Alaska has given us, and the basis upon which those numbers were gathered.
Well, I can check into that, but I do not know the particular facts of that. I do know that there is a robust literature about why people start smoking and not necessarily about when. And the literature about why people start smoking is they're emulating their friends and peer groups. So that's what I know about that issue.
All right. Thank you. One last question. Are you aware that when you go on a military reservation, most reservations have a closed post, some don't, but once you're on the reservation to purchase at the grocery or the commissaries, you're aware of the fact you have to show an active military ID or a veteran's card in order to get into the facility?
I am aware of that, yes.
Okay, thank you.
have one question.
Senator Green.
Yeah, and I was looking at a pamphlet we have here, our book, Saving Lives and Raising Revenue by the Department of Health and Social Services here in Alaska. And on one of the pages, it talks about taxes on cigarettes in major industrialized nations. And it shows the U.S. at the, you know, around 57 cents, and it goes all the way up to Denmark at 426. And with Canada somewhere in between. And I know, in not that I've traveled in Europe that much, I found everything is very, very, very expensive. And certainly in England, where they were doing the value-added taxes, you know, we took the English price, multiplied it by 2, and divided it by 4, then we knew what we would pay for it in the United States. So I'm wondering if there's a skew on the proposal. I don't doubt that that's what's charged as a cigarette tax, but I'm wondering if there's a general, if we overlaid this with every type of product, if we would find a similar skew. I mean, whether it's candy.
The US?
Yeah, between candy, magazines, paperback books, I know there was a tremendous difference.
I think the answer is probably yes, certainly with gasoline.
Yeah.
But, you have to belong to one of two schools, and I happen to belong to the school that we shouldn't copy Europe, they should copy us. And that it's better to be a low-tax jurisdiction than a high-tax jurisdiction if you have a choice. And the reason for that is that economic growth over the long run is higher, and the society is richer as a result. So I don't... I think what you say is exactly accurate, but I think you have to figure out as legislators where do you want to be on that tax continuum, and what does it matter to the long-run viability and health of your economy?
Yeah, no, I would agree, and because I'm not sure that this presents a case for increased taxes, and... because I know what it costs to live in those countries. Another item that on the Canada, and you may be able to speak to this, I know we visited in Quebec, Montreal area, and everyone we talked there in the citizenry, and this has been several years, you know, were so upset because it had the Olympics there, and their sin taxes were imposed to pay for the failed financial investment of those countries that were involved in that 84-82 Olympics. And again, we have sin taxes paying for a failed economic development of a country.
An earmark in that particular case that the smokers themselves might have approved. I doubt very seriously if you took a referendum of smokers in Alaska that they would necessarily be approved into the kind of earmarks that are in these bills. And if you look at the public opinion data that lady from the Department of Revenue presented, those figures fall out at about the ratio of smokers to non-smokers in the population. So what you essentially are doing here is have a form of majoritarian democracy at work. Smokers are a minority, and yes, they are easy to pick on. The question is whether you really want to do that or not. If you can see that this is taking additional income from people who can hardly afford to lose it.
Thank you,
Mr. Tollison. And you're right, this technology does work pretty well. We're about 2 years away from doing this on all on TV. So, well, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
I'd like to go now.
Mr. Chairman, before we proceed, I want to clarify a point, whether, and we may have to ask someone in the audience to clear this up, because the last exchange seemed to put on the record that smokers in the public opinion surveys in Alaska opposed the tax, and I believe the testimony or the materials presented were just the opposite, that in fact smokers surveyed were in support of a tax increase. So I was hoping we could clear that up before we proceed. So none of us misunderstand that point.
I didn't hear that. So, did Mr. Dawson, did you understand?
If I didn't say that exactly, I said something awfully close to it. So I think he's right. I just want to look at the survey. Smokers, everybody professes to want to quit smoking. The fact is that they don't do it. And I just don't know what kind of response bias was built into the way the question was put to smokers. But I would find it hard if somebody walked up to me and said, "Would I support a tax increase on a product that I consume?" My natural inclination would be to say no. Now, maybe I'm certainly not disputing her veracity or her results, but to me, that's an odd result that people would want to pay more for a product that they consume.
Senator Ellis?
Mr. Chairman, I just point out that I think Mr. Tollison's just told us that he's not familiar with the survey that was done, and the evidence presented to the committee was that, you've heard it before, Republicans, Democrats, conservatives, liberals, smokers, non-smokers, by a majority of each of those subgroups support the increase. So.
Senator Green.
I would just add that the majority may still be there, but it's still certainly it was over 20% different between users and those apparently in the other group who were nearly 75% and all, and the other was around 53%. It's still a majority, but it's not the same.
I was surprised, too, to see more conservatives than liberals support the tax. That was a surprising figure, but gratifying.
Thank you again, Mr. Tollison.
Thank you.
For the record, Senator Ward has rejoined us from Senate Finance. I'd like to go now to Mr. David Sweener. Mr. Sweener is from, if you'd introduce yourself, you're testifying from Toronto, is that correct?
From Ottawa.
Ottawa. If you would please, Mr. Sweener, identify yourself and whom you represent.
Sure. I'm David Sweener, and I'm senior legal counsel with a couple of health organizations here in Canada. But on taxation, I've not only worked on tobacco taxation issues in Canada for about a dozen years, I've also done extensive work with the World Health Organization, with various countries around the world, and in the United States, I do quite a bit of work with the American Cancer Society. I've been on panels with the National Cancer Institute. I've worked with the American Lung Association, the American Medical Association. I submitted materials, done work for the Center for Disease Control, and for other bodies. So I've done an awful lot of work on tobacco taxation. Today I'm here because I was asked by health groups in Alaska whether I'd be willing to talk a little bit about the experience and the importance of this sort of taxation. I'm not getting paid by anybody, so I'm not sure who I'm representing. I believe I'm just here to provide information. And I believe there is some information that's already been distributed to the members of the committee, some graphs that I can refer to as I go through this. I think the history of tobacco taxation in the United States is an interesting one. And as has been mentioned, the United States has low taxes compared to other countries. What hasn't been mentioned is, and I guess it's also been mentioned, that Alaska has taxes that are low compared to the rest of the United States. In fact, if you look at the total percentage of the retail price that goes to taxes, Alaska's got one of the lowest levels of all the states. It's right there with the tobacco belt, the Carolinas, Virginia, where Mr. Tollison was testifying from, Kentucky. But I think what isn't well understood is that the United States not only has low taxes compared to other countries, it has low taxes compared to where those tax levels used to be 40 years ago. If we go back to the and this is very important when we look at where should we be going, because there is this very strong relationship between price and consumption. And in the materials that I believe have been distributed, graph number one looks at the relationship between consumption and price in the United States from the mid-1950s right up to the present. And we can see that basically whenever price went up, consumption went down. Whenever price went down, because dealing with inflation-adjusted prices here. Whenever price went down, consumption went up. But if we look at what this means for taxes and for the amount the tobacco industry was making, black at the bottom of the graph, the combined federal and state taxes, which is the white above that, and the pack price, showing that the price of tobacco has indeed increased a lot since the late 1950s. But the vast part of that increase has not been to taxes, it's been because of price increases by the tobacco companies, and that's been primarily during the 1980s and the beginning of the 90s. That's not looking at inflation, though. And if we look at inflation, if we adjust to see what's happened in real terms, in inflation-adjusted terms, we get to graph three. And we can see that the federal taxes now are quite a bit lower than what they were in the late 1950s. And the federal and state taxes, indeed, are quite a bit lower than what they were in the 50s and quite a bit lower than what they were even as recently as 1970. And it's worth noting that if you simply adjust for the consumer price index, Alaska's tax now is lower than what it was in the early 1960s, around 1963, 64, at the time of the first report of the U.S. Surgeon General showing just how big a health problem we had. And this is something that that is really an anomaly, that at exactly the time we were finding out just how deadly the product was, we were seeing the tax policy going in a direction that was adverse to health policy. And the evidence of why we shouldn't do something like that, I think, is overwhelming. We know from many, many studies, particularly studies from the United States, from professors like Kenneth Warner, Eugene Lewitt, Frank Chalupka, that tax plays an important role in affecting price, and price plays an important role in affecting consumption, and it particularly affects consumption among kids. And that's not too surprising. We all adjust our behavior on the basis of price incentives. In Canada, our experience was that as prices went up, and they went up quite dramatically in the 1980s, we saw an overall decline in total per capita consumption of about 40%. Teen use, and this is on graph 60, I've pulled out another document that you will have in front of you. Teen tobacco use went down 60%. We went from 42% of teenagers who were smoking every day down to 16% in the space of about 10 years. We then had, and revenue during that time, as another graph shows, tripled. We went from $2 billion a year up to over $7 billion a year, even though total sales had gone down, exactly what the U.S. studies had indicated would happen. When there was smuggling, the smuggling was primarily in eastern Canada, and that was primarily because Canadian-based tobacco companies started shipping billions of cigarettes into upstate New York. We didn't have a smuggling problem until our prices got to be about three times what they were on the U.S. side of the border, despite the fact that most Canadians in this part of the country huddled right along that border. In Western Canada, there was the protection of geography, plus there were governments that decided that they wouldn't put up with smuggling and would bring forward anti-smuggling measures. And that's why in British Columbia, as has been mentioned earlier, their prices in U.S. dollar terms is a little over $4 U.S. dollars a pack now. The taxes are about a little over 270 U.S. a pack. They've been able to maintain those taxes. They've been able to maintain their revenue while keeping consumption down. And in the parts of Canada that had taxes rolled back, we saw exactly what you'd expect from any basic economics textbook, that when prices went down, consumption's gone up, and it's gone up particularly among kids. So there's no question about what happens, and this has been replicated in many countries, including the United Kingdom, which put up taxes quite sharply, recognizing that if they wanted to have a healthier economy, it's better to have consumption taxes and no better product to tax than tobacco. And it just makes sense that you want to keep things like income taxes low, put tobacco taxes up as an alternative. And the UK has knocked tobacco consumption down quite a bit as a result.
Mr. Sweener, could I ask that you conclude your comments, please?
Sure. I think just in summation, that you have heard arguments that tobacco taxes aren't a good idea, and you will hear arguments, as we have heard from the tobacco industry, that they don't reduce use. I must say that the health and medical organizations I work with in the United States and around the world have reviewed this material in terrific detail, and the fact is, if tobacco taxes didn't work, we wouldn't be doing it. I don't think the tobacco industry has a good economic base to the arguments that they're using. Anytime that it's been put under scrutiny, it's found wanting. And I think that any of the arguments that come up, whether it's saying it's going to be tough on poor people, or it could cause smuggling, or it's going to cause losses for
Thank you, Mr. Sweener. Questions of the witness? Senator Green.
Yeah, I just have one question on the last domestic sale of cigarettes and fine cut equivalents. I think it's the last of your inserts. I would like to know the reasoning for the 1989 and I guess it's 1994. What incidents happened that caused those two to cross? Were there economic factors or?
Sure. Well, go through it, and that it really, in terms of lines crossing, depends how somebody plots them. In this case, what we're looking at is the total sales, which is that solid black line, and we can see the total sales of cigarettes in Canada went from over $70 billion mm-hmm. in 1981 down to under $40 billion by 1993. That coincided, because this argument comes up, that if you put up taxes, you're going to reduce sales enough that you're going to lose revenue. And in reality, what happens is because you're bringing in much more revenue per pack, your overall revenue goes up. And that's the dotted line, looking at the total revenue that was coming to Canadian governments, that's federal and provincial combined, per year. And that went from about $2 billion, this is on the right-hand side of the graph, the numbers, from about $2 billion in 1981 up to, it was around $7.2 billion by 1992. Those revenue figures then fell when the government cut taxes as a way of dealing with smuggling. So even though tobacco sales were going up, revenue was going down. It's just the reverse, that you always make money by increasing taxes on tobacco products. You lose money if you reduce those taxes.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions of Mr. Sweener? Seeing none, thank you, sir, for joining us this morning from Ottawa.
You're very welcome. Good to be on.
All right, anything else before we plan our Friday? Anything else from the audience or from the committee? My intent would be on Friday to have any amendments that would be presented for these two bills. We do have two bills in front of us, so we'll make an effort to blend those if we want. I know there's at least two amendments out there. Senator Ward has one, and I have one. So if you'll get if you would get those to myself or to Sheila, as soon as possible, we'll get it out to the committee. So, anything else in regard to these two bills? Seeing none, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you for coming.